Could you give an overview of what you mean by solar thermal power technology? And then what is the general difference between this technology and photovoltaic systems? And you used an interesting analogy to describe the difference.
Failure of the high voltage grid. So then you need stability, and then solar turbines. large-scale utility processes, solar thermal is the technology of choice.
What is your role, if any, in the Desertec Industrial Initiative? MAN Solar Millennium is one of the companies backing that.
Yes, well, yeah, definitely MAN Solar Millennium, or today, as we said, Flaxsol, is not only one of the companies backing it, we were one of the initiating and founding members of the Desertec Industrial Initiative.
Hmm.
Each of the executives in our company obviously has his roles and contributions to support DII with progressing their work. It hardly needs any mention that we are a founding member for very strategic reasons, and we believe that North Africa can be, or let's say the southern or the eastern part of the Mediterranean, can be the generation backyard of Europe, not today, but in one, maybe two decades.
Hmm.
To do that, a cross-border framework needs to be set up. So basically, if you want a household in Denmark to contract solar power for its own electricity consumption, what you want is that you somewhere generate that solar power to the best available cost in the world. Now, one way of doing that is putting a PV panel on top of the roof of that guy. That definitely is far less cost efficient than setting up a large-scale generation facility where the solar conditions are best, and then we talk like Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, Libya, transport that by high-capacity cables into mainland Europe that has a very dense grid anyway, and getting it into Denmark. The losses that you have over, let's say, 1,500 to 200 kilometers of electricity transport, they are not that significant. And if you do it that way, the household in Denmark using solar power does that to much more advantageous economic terms than in the case it would have a PV panel on top of its roof. Now, to do that, you not only need to connect a solar power plant, let's say in Morocco, with that family in Denmark, but you need a regulatory framework where all these countries involved, because the EU, as you will appreciate, it is one EU, but there's still many national governments with significant authorities and power in many of these energy sector regulation chapters. So you need many, many countries to combine and adjust their regulations to make that happen. And that is a major role of the DII, to make sure that when you set up a solar power plant in Morocco and you have a family in Denmark, that you get it connected. Now, to do so, they established a seven-step program analyzing this whole process from Morocco to Denmark. And they are driving forward legislation and regulations that ensure a seamless fit between all these parties involved. And that sounds that easy, but I can tell you it's not that easy to do. And at the end of the day, we are not in the world to produce solar power. What we are there for is to make sure that the consumers that use electricity and that are environmentally conscious and want to reduce their carbon footprint, that they have viable options, economically viable options to satisfy that demand. And then if you look at the larger picture, of course, this whole North Africa to Europe strategy definitely jumps to mind. But it takes regulations. And regulations take a lot of governmental support. I'm not talking money, I'm really talking laws and, let's say, priority on transport over high voltage backbone grids and seamless cost structures that make it happen. And yes, of course, increasing capacities of interconnectors that are there between the south and the north of the Mediterranean, but are never conceived to transport this sort of capacities that we're thinking about here. So that's the role of DII, and that's a tremendously difficult challenge, and the people that are handling this task within DII, they are very, very competent and very experienced in, let's say, the European utilities theater. So I'm convinced they will make it happen, but they'll have a tough job doing so.
What are some of the other big projects that Flaxsol is involved in today?
Under Andalusia, by the name of Andasol, where we have successfully put into operation Europe's first solar thermal power plant, Andasol 1, followed a year later by Andersholt 2 and Andersholt 3 that we had to finance in the middle of the credit crunch. So, you know, there were easier days in our lives. Andersholt 3 is now approaching completion, and we expect it to be generating power within a month from today. So that will be 3 times 50, a total cluster of 150 megawatt of solar power. 3 identical units, each one with a 7-hour storage capacity, so that we can supply power into the grid for many hours after sunset. Then there is a 4th project in Spain that is approaching financial close quickly. That is the project Iberdrola in the Spanish Extremadura, west of Madrid. That is also in a very advanced stage. There is a pipeline of other projects in Spain, and you know the current law in Spain limits every project to a maximum capacity of 50 megawatt. Another successful project of ours is in Egypt, where we just weeks ago completed a solar field together with our partner Orascom. That solar field is feeding into a new combined cycle power plant integrated at the steam cycle. The size in electricity output equivalent is about 20 megawatts. We are involved also in a big project in South Africa. The Southern African government is preparing a renewable energy law that goes in a number of phases. It's not only laws, but they also need regulations and procedures to allocate licenses to private parties. So this will take a little while. We expect them to be ready with all the paperwork by April or May this year. And there we are involved with local partners in a substantially sized solar thermal power plant in one of the best areas of the country. On top of that, we are one of the 4 remaining qualified bidders for the first Moroccan solar thermal power project. And that will not only be the first one in Morocco, but also the first one in the Maghreb countries, the northwest area of Africa. Morocco is perfectly suited for solar power generation with almost no fossil fuel of themselves, having to import it all. A rather stable economy, and one must add that nowadays a much more stable political framework as some of the other countries that are so much in turmoil in the past weeks. And that also will be typically a 125, maybe 150 megawatt type of project.
Could you talk a little about Germany's feed-in tariff program that has helped make Germany a leader in solar energy? I understand it's having some challenges.
One of the things to be marveled at is that a long time ago, that must be about two decades back, they adopted a law and they gradually improved and refined it, where they said every operator, every investor, every operator of a renewable energy plant, he will get a feed-in tariff. A fixed power price for his production. Now, that feed-in tariff, once the project is brought, the investment, the power plant is brought onto the grid, it stays stable over the 20 or 25 years that this legislation is valid. And there's no way that anybody can change that. If you bring your power plant, whether a wind farm or biomass or solar, whatever it is, rooftop application of a PV unit, if you bring it onto the grid 1 year later, the feed-in tariff will have decreased by maybe 2%. But then once it is onto the grid, the feed-in tariff will not change anymore. So there is a degression as a way of factoring in technology progress. Now, the most clever thing the Germans did is that they said, well, the funds to pay for all these fixed power prices, they are not coming out of government pockets, so there is no subsidy or whatever. It's often referred to as a subsidy, but it's not. They at the same time, they instituted that all the energy bills that every consumer, industrial, commercial, or retail, every consumer of electricity pays a surcharge on his electricity bill. And that surcharge, it is simply a coverage system. So let's say if the payments are 3 billion euros in 1 year, then all the electricity consumer have to pay a surcharge that equals €3 billion. And in that way, the government never has any risk exposure. So I think they did that very cleverly. So that's a course, when this photovoltaic technology was enabled within Germany, manufacturers set up set of production lines for PV cells, initially with capacities like 10 megawatts a year. Now, of course, we are thinking also from the global market development of units like 100 or 500 megawatts of panel production a year. Now, everybody setting up manufacturing capacity, looking at Germany, he's looking at the world. As we all know, China is the manufacturing backyard of the world. So many of these manufacturers shifted their manufacturing capabilities and capacities from Germany into China, sometimes India, where, let's say, labor conditions, investment climate for manufacturing plants are much more favorable. So what's actually happening now in Germany? This is a big debate in the press and in the public theater, is that the German consumers are paying for jobs in China and for investors in China that manufacture cells. Now, so many manufacturing capacities of PV cells have been set up that there is overcapacity now in the world. And the reduction in the PV tariff from this technology review I mentioned a minute ago led to a reduction in the market in Germany, being so far the most important market in the world for PV. It cut down global demand, so there's an overcapacity. So now Chinese manufacturers are dumping their panels because they have to get rid of them to get at least some cash inflow into their manufacturing plants. And by doing that, they are creating unemployment in the German solar manufacturing industry. So you can imagine there are some politicians and there are some areas of the general public that are not 100% content with this development. If you carve that out, it's a by effect of the renewable energy law that has been adhered to in Germany now for almost two decades. If you carve that out, I think the renewable energy law, not restricted to solar, has been the most successful in the world.
What do you think the solar energy industry will look like in, say, the next 5 years?
Now, what will definitely happen is that this is an industry that has an almost unrivaled technology push. And that also means that there will be consolidation in the global markets, on the manufacturing cycle, on the supply side of the market. And it means that only those companies that are successful in creating revenues with which they can fund their technology progress, only those will be there in a couple of years' time. So it will be a tough market in the coming years. At the same time, we observe that, let's say, on the demand side, we really are witnessing a unique breakthrough, with many governments announcing and implementing their solar strategies from Australia, India, we discussed Morocco, but also in the Middle East and definitely some of the other Sunbelt countries. And also, and this is an interesting aspect, big industrial companies that have a substantial carbon footprint that want to reduce that to make sure that they meet standards of corporate social responsibility, if not economical standards, from reducing their carbon footprint and preventing CO2 emission certificates buy-in. So there is a massive breakthrough on the demand side, but there is also a tremendous technology push that requires big funds. And of course, that means the next 5 years, the market will be in turbulence. Now, that's always a nice phase to be in, but it also means that in 5 years' time, the market will definitely look different. There is a tremendous push for larger units. Regenerating technology is always benefiting from larger scale applications. Only in the early 90s, the company I used to work for set up a coal-fired power plant of just over 600 megawatts. And we thought that was the limit. And nowadays, a single block coal-fired power plant is 1,100, simply because larger is better. But okay, technology had to be advanced to make it happen. And the same will happen in solar. There will be a push for larger power plants, simply to capture